Coors Light. Whatever your mountain, climb on. Also brought to you by Bank of Colorado. There's only one. By UC Health. And by First Bank. Now, live from Lucky Joe's Sidewalk Saloon, here is your host, Brian Roth.
Snowy night in beautiful Old Town Fort Collins. Welcome to the Coors Light Basketball Coaches Show. Great crowd here on hand. As I mentioned, snowing outside, a little bit, you know, a little slippery on your way in. But we appreciate all of you coming out. A tough weekend for Colorado State basketball, but lots to look forward to. We will discuss that over the next hour. Hi, everybody. My name is Matthew Wozniak. You're used to the voice of the Rams, Brian Roth, being with you. He is on assignment tonight, a very important assignment. I'm going to do my best to fill in. We're calling in the lefty here as a setup man. We've got one more show. That's the penultimate show of the Coors Light Basketball Coaches Show. So I'm just going to be setting this one up until we can meet again on March 1st. As we get ready for that March Madness. Of course, in the first half of this broadcast, we'll be discussing Colorado State women's basketball, and in the second half, we'll be talking about Colorado State men's basketball, being joined by Ryan Williams, as well as interim head basketball coach. Tell me the name, Ryan.
Who is it? It's Jace. All right, our boy Jace is here tonight.
Exactly right. Trying to give him a good introduction here, Jace Hurl. Come on now.
Yeah.
He's done a great job, so we'll talk about him in just a few minutes. But first, Ryan, let's talk about your squad and how we're doing. First of all, it's snowing outside today. It was 65 and sunny. I know usually you like to give the kids, you know, Sunday off to recover from the game. You hit the links, right?
Yeah, I hit the film session. I mean,
yeah.
It was brutal, too. It was an awful Sunday watching that thing, that Fresno film. But, you know, first of all, it is a really snowy evening. But look at this. You can't call these fans fair weather fans.
Not at all.
I mean, this is an awesome turnout. It really is. And these are the faithful. We appreciate you guys. And they love the Rams, whether it's snowing, raining, shining, winning, losing. And you're our varsity guy. You're the voice of the Rams for me. I don't know what you're talking about. You're the voice right here for women's basketball, Wozniak.
Yeah.
Just don't ask any specific questions about that Fresno game. Usually Roth, he lets me dance around the tough stuff. Are you going to let me dance tonight, or are we going to get into the nitty-gritty?
Well, anybody who was actually at the game on Saturday knows that we got a little dance move in me here. But, getting some laughs here. But, no, we do have to go back and talk about that contest, an overtime loss for Colorado State. And let's go back to the specific discussion that we had before it began. And in the grand scheme of things, that was a very pivotal game for both squads' regular season championships prospects. You fell down in overtime, and really it came down to what I think we talked about in the very beginning in our pregame discussion. It was going to be who can handle the perimeter, who can distribute the ball. Is that what you saw in your film session?
Well, it was, and I thought, you know, for the most part, we were – defensively, we were really solid. And you talk about who's going to make plays on the perimeter. We needed to make some shots. You know, the bottom line came, it was, you know, we were 23 of 70, you know, and we got 9 more shots at the basket than Fresno did. You have to, you know, we have to shoot better. That's pretty simple. Then it came down to their quarterback in White making some plays in overtime. I thought in regulation, we held it to 17 points in regulation. And then, you know, she had a 12-point overtime period, and that proved to be really critical. But, yeah, it was – the zone bothered us. You know, we – I don't know if these coaches are listening out there in our league, but, heck, I'd zone us all the time.
That's where my specific question comes into you. I mean, we talk about the zone, and the nice thing about that zone, and not from our perspective, but from their perspective, is how effective it is and how disruptive it is. It seems to me that they work you into a bunch of different tempos because they extended it three-quarter court. They want to get you over the timeline, maybe feign a trap, and then all of a sudden it just boxes everything in and nothing happens. You had a lot of trouble figuring out what those tempos were, right?
Well, yeah, and they do that, and that's just how they play. And you know, sometimes we attacked it well, and other possessions we didn't. But you know, they shortened the clock by stretching that little extended 2-3 zone or whatever you want to call it. And so you've got about 18-19 seconds a lot of times to to maybe reverse the ball and get a good shot. But I'm going to tell you, you guys, we had a lot of good looks. I mean, they give you what, you know, they do give you a lot of threes. And we started spreading the floor a little bit and driving it. But instead of driving, and now you got to find people.
Yeah.
And that's where our team struggles.
Okay.
And it's probably, I don't know if it's something that you can really fix. Just some of our vision when we penetrate's not all that good at times. But we still had plenty of good shots, Matt. And you got to make them. You hold them to 57. We talked about this the first time we played them. You hold them to 56 at their place. You got to win that game. You hold them to 57 here. You got to win that game. It came down to offense for us. And we just, like you said, didn't handle it as well as maybe we should have. And needed to be better. But it was a crazy, just to you know, talk about what you said in the beginning, how this is a crazy league right now. Here's what went down on Saturday. You have the number 9 team playing the number 2 team in the league, and which was Wyoming and San Jose. And Wyoming had to make a basket under 1 second to go to win the game at San Jose. That's 2-9. And then one plays 8. That goes to overtime. And that was Nevada and UNLV. And then you have 4-5 goes to overtime. So if you don't think Vegas is going to be wild and crazy, it is, because – you look at 1 through, I mean, you can even say 1 through 11.
I'm not kidding you. We've talked about Air Force before.
Everybody's got their vulnerabilities. Dangerous. Everybody's vulnerable. And if you catch somebody on the right night, they're gonna beat you. And so I think it's going to be a really neat tournament. And we've got a lot of teams that you've got to pay attention to. And, you know, we went from having a chance to win the league to maybe we're 4, 5, or 6 going into that Mount West Conference tournament. That's how crucial or pivotal that game was on Saturday. And that's why I was also really grumpy on Sunday, is because of that.
We'll talk about the forward-looking Colorado State Rams in just a moment. Because before we get to that tournament, don't forget, you got an awful lot of tough competitors coming up here very, very soon. All right, let's go back to this game very, very briefly. One of the players that did step up, and we're going to be keeping an eye on this in case people have not been paying attention to this. Stina Auskalen led the team on the afternoon, 21 points, 5 of 10 from downtown. You talked about those three-point looks. You talked about getting on the perimeter. She was one of the players who was out there getting it done for you, and we'll be keeping an eye on her because she is right there for setting an all-time Colorado State women's basketball mark for three-point percentage as it comes down to – she's sitting around like 460 right now. I know Rob Slayman could probably tell me the exact number, but still a few games to go. So she's one of the components that got it done on the outside. Other players didn't quite get it done as consistently as you wanted, and consistency was one of the hallmarks of what you've said that you want your team to do going in it. Do you think that having that bye week maybe took a little edge off?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, you surely – can look back and ask that question. And did we had such a nice momentum going, and we were playing with an edge and it was just consistently good play, and we were shooting the ball well over that 6 or 7 game period. And I don't know, we needed the rest. So did we lose the edge? We had really good practices, we did, but we just had a little, you know, a flat performance, you know. And not that it was god awful, but it was not what we had been playing. And you've seen us play the previous
Certainly.
6 games, and I'm sure that's why you asked the question. But Stina's been so consistent and reliable her whole career. And that's the one thing you think of when you think of Stina. She's just – you can count on that young lady. She just is so reliable on both ends of the floor. And she makes big shots, Matt. It's not that she just shoots a good percentage. Stina makes big shots, and even in that first quarter when we were struggling a little offensively, Stina got us off the schneid. Stina made a couple big threes, and she takes them with great courage and great conviction. And so I'm proud of how she is finishing her career here, and I think she'll get that record. She's just that tough-minded.
But here's the thing that goes into that record that I think a lot of people don't necessarily focus on. She finds spots to get open. She finds open looks so that she can find – and that's a different type of genius. I mean, obviously, you have to have talent to be able to hit three-pointers. Heck knows, yeah. I can't do it. But when she finds openings on the court and she's not afraid to take advantage of it, that may be maybe the greatest – teaching lesson for some of the younger kids on a very young Colorado State squad.
It really, you know, she's really good at trying to hunt down her shot. And that's something, you know, you try to show kids on film. Sometimes you either have that or you don't. It's kind of like the vision thing when you drive and you see who's open. And I know we all see it in the stands, but when you're going 1,000 miles an hour and there's three or four kids around you, you don't always see that play. You know, and I used to like Bob Knight. You know, I'm an Indiana guy, and he always used to say, well, you can't teach somebody. You can show them what to see, but you can't teach them what to see. If they either have that or you don't. And Stina has that instinct of finding that little seam, that that little float to the side, you know, right or left, to get that shot off. And I think that's a tremendous talent, really, because that's using her brain. And we just need her to get more of those shots off.
Speaking of getting more of those shots, I mean, one of the players who came in and down the stretch that propelled you into that overtime opportunity was Gracie Tolovalo. Now, we talked about the ups and downs with Richard. Now we're talking about the vision of a senior who has been around the block. She knows she can see the court. It slowed down for her. Gracie's still learning that. But now she started to pick things apart and started getting in there and started to hit some layups, and obviously it was her ability to penetrate that zone, find openings, that ultimately propelled you into that overtime period.
Yeah, it became one of those games again where it became small ball again, and it was basically we were playing with five guards out there trying to spread them out. You know, the biggest young lady they had on the floor was 6'1", in Maddie Udy. So, you know, it was more of a spread the game out. We went five out. They were going to sit in that 2-3, so we have the numbers advantage, right? And which we did. We spread them out. We drove the basketball, and that's what Gracie did so well. And looking back on it, you know, you just probably should have had her in the game maybe a little earlier, because she is one, and we've seen it, she's one young lady that can finish really well at the rim. But, you know, oh, being a freshman, the ups and downs, you know, did we think Gracie was going to play that good? Well, the previous two games, she gave us no indication that she was going to play that well. So, yeah, that's how difficult it is to be a coach. You just don't know what's going to show up. But she did have a really good finish to that game and got us into overtime with that really good play at the rim and gave us some life. We just didn't quite finish it off.
And ultimately, at the end of the day, you saw Candace White, who has been, again, another seasoned player, one of the best players in the Mountain West, take over that overtime period, and the Rams fall 75-64. But a lot to look forward to, including a road match at Boise State. I know we probably don't even remember them. It's been since a long time ago that the Rams confronted the Broncos. Now they get to go up to the Big Chalupa in Boise. We'll talk about them in just a moment with head coach Ryan Williams on the Coors Light Basketball Coaches Show. Stay with us next. Colorado State Sports Network from Learfield. Coors Light Basketball Coaches Show continues here in beautiful Old Town Fort Collins. Ram fans, remember the 2018 Colorado State football season tickets are on sale now, featuring seven games, including home matchups against SEC foe Arkansas and the Border War rival Wyoming, as well as the Rocky Mountain Showdown in Denver. For more tickets and more information, visit csurams.com/tickets or call 800-491-RAMS. Head coach Ryan Williams remains with us here for the second segment. All right, so we get a little salty there after an overtime loss at home, but still, as we press forward here, you're going on the road with a rematch against the Broncos of Boise State. Now, SID Rob Slayman informs me that in matchups against Boise State, Colorado State has been 5-0 the last few times. We're going to try and make it 6. They're a team that has been kind of on the same pace as you, a little up and down, trying to find their sea legs, trying to find their footing in this very crowded Mountain West race. What do you see about them as you waltz into the Big Chalupa on Wednesday?
Yeah, you know, Boise's, they've been playing well here lately, and they've kind of changed how they've played. They had Big Wheeler, their post players, must have been injured. She's missed the last 10 games. They're playing three guards on the floor a lot that really shoot it. The first time around, they kind of, you know, shooters kind of shared spots, subbed for one another. Now they're on the floor together a lot. So they're playing a little smaller. They stretch you a little bit more offensively than maybe they did earlier in the year. And they can score, right? I mean, yeah. They put up 112 at San Jose. They had a 90-point performance against New Mexico here a couple weeks ago. So they're really offensively, it seems like they've found a great stride. And the fact that they're putting a lot of shooters out on the floor, you know, makes them a lot more difficult to defend. But we're going to go up there with a good plan and some good fight and see if we can't steal another one like we have here in the last couple of years.
One of the things you mentioned just a moment ago was the fact that the zone of Fresno State gave you a little bit of trouble. Other teams throughout the season playing zone are giving you a little bit of trouble. On the defensive side of things, what do you expect from Boise State? Are they going to man you up?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, they're going to do a little bit of everything. I mean, it's if you go back to the first time we played them, it was a little bit of man where we had the most success. I mean, we scored at probably a little close to a 60% clip when they manned us. When they zoned us, it was a little different clip. So I think we'll probably see more of the zone, to be honest with you. They'll extend it a little bit. They can trap a little bit out of it like Fresno did. But they're a little unique in they'll start in a man or they'll start in their zone and then you make so many passes, you know, they'll count out loud. It's really kind of unique. They'll go 1, 2, 3. You hear their coaches yelling or counting. And then after three passes or say, then they switch to man. And so they just keep you a little bit off a rhythm. So we've just got to make sure we're pretty aware and recognizing what they're doing. And when we are organized, we had really good success against it. So I think we can score the ball a little better than maybe we did here. I think we'll get good shots. We're just going to have to defend. And Lufer's tearing it up right now.
Yeah, Mount West Player of the Week.
Was she really? I'll be darned. I mean, we're going against that. So she's averaging.
Sorry to be the bearer of bad news there. But
I don't pay attention to that stuff. But she averaged, I think she's averaging 21 points in league. She's averaging 4.7 three-point makes a game in league. You guys, that's outstanding. That's somebody you talk about knows how to hunt down her shot.
Oh, yeah.
So we're gonna sick some kids on her and make it really difficult, probably try to get the ball out of her hands a little bit more, trap her a little bit and make life kind of crazy for her. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Well, last time we were talking about the Boise State Broncos, again, your offense, it was early in the season. Colorado State fell here at home, and you're still looking for the consistent offense, the consistent player you had. Now, Hannah Tverdy had been that player over here over the last month. She had a rough go of it on Saturday. She's obviously the one you want to lean on, but what other sort of outside secondary scoring players can possibly take advantage of what you see from the Broncos?
Yeah, you know, that stretch where we had that six-game win streak was a really good streak, and we had a lot of kids playing well. Yes, Tverdy had a great stretch, and Stina shot the ball well. Sophie's somebody that's been, progressively shooting the ball better. But Annie Brady, Laura DeVos, Jordan Edwards, those kids kind of picked up their play. And so when we went to the bench, we didn't lose much, and in some regards, we were a little better. And against Boise, it just depends on how they guard us. We've got some kids that just, when they see a zone, it's just not the best thing for them. Or if we want to defend ball screens a certain way, some kids have a hard time doing that.
Right.
And so we'll just see how this game develops. But, and Gracie's somebody as well, Matt. I think this is a game where I think we'll try to get Gracie more involved, especially if we see some zone and it's spaced out. You can run the ball a little bit more. It just seems to fit her game maybe a little more than say JoJo a little bit. And so that's what that's the thing. That's part of coaching. Some games fit young ladies more than other games. That's no different than any sport, football, baseball, or whatever. It's just how it goes. And we'll see how this game plays out. But we do have a number of kids that here recently have been playing good basketball.
I'm going to ask you about one right now and interrupt you. Laura DeVos, with her ability to attack and get in the lane and hit from close range, especially getting around her first level of defense, she might be that player that I was going to be focusing on.
Yeah, so I missed that. You set that up and I missed it. A swing and a miss, okay?
I told you he was bringing in the setup, man.
Yeah.
I got to bring in a little change-up.
You got a nasty curve or whatever.
Change-up.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. But Laura is she's versatile. She's somebody that can get in the lane, and she made some nice decisions the other night. She's finishing well around the rim. And so, and she gives you that switchability defensively. Let's face it, that's so critical for us. She can guard really five spots on the floor. And so Laura's somebody that the fact that she's had a nice little stretch here, and you know, she kind of went in that little downward stretch, you know, midway through the year, but she's climbed out of that and has been a nice weapon for us. And I think the positives are, you know, the Fresno was tough. There's no doubt about it. But yeah, for us and for me, that's just maybe a blip. You know, it's not like, okay, now we're going to tank. I mean, we've been playing good basketball. We really have. And we know the stretch in front of us is difficult. We know that. But I totally anticipate our team continuing to move forward and to play better basketball towards the end of the year and be a really tough team to beat when it comes to, you know, that postseason tournament. I totally expect that. And so Boise's another opportunity to go out there and compete and to try to move this team forward. And we know it's a challenge, but our kids are surely up for it.
Oh, indeed. And you just mentioned that the Mountain West tournament is going to be quite a show. And again, the standings and each team is completely everyone has their difficulties, their probabilities. Okay, so you go on the road here this week on Wednesday to Boise State, but then you come home on the weekend for the final home game, and you got some seniors that need to be recognized, and we hope that everyone will get their tickets at csurams.com and support these young ladies. And although maybe, and I say maybe, a regular season title may be off the table, they're going to need some forward momentum and building some winning opportunities and winning attitudes as they move into a wide-open Mountain West tournament and win that thing. So you've got some seniors playing their final games at Moby Arena when you welcome in Nevada on Saturday. Any thoughts about what you expect from your kids? Is it going to be an emotional day? What do you want to see from them? Do you just want to keep taking it one game at a time or what?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the coach speak, right? Game at a time, that sort of thing. But it is always an emotional night. I mean, and the reason it is because you think of Stina and Hannah Taverdi and Veronica, they've been with us for a long time, and they helped build the culture here and establish what we are as a basketball program. And they take great pride, and they've had great fun playing in Moby Arena and playing in front of our fans. And so they get to do that one last time. And so there's pressure on that game to get those kids a victory. And so the sooner we just make it a basketball game and kind of put those things aside and just make it a basketball game, the better off that we'll be. But because of what they have helped build and because what our fans have helped build, you're darn right, it's an emotional night. And I was doing an interview before I came here with a newspaper. And they asked, you know, what have these three kids meant? And they've meant the world to this program. And let's face it, Stina, Taverdi, and Veronica, they earned their minutes this year. They've had plenty of games and plenty of minutes where they sat right next to our coaches, all right? And there were plenty of times those kids didn't even get in the basketball game. But the thing I appreciate the most from those guys is that they kept listening. Right, they stayed faithful to the program. They kept working, and when their opportunity came, they seized it. And look, they're providing us with a really good basketball season. And so I think it's just a lesson for everybody, and our young kids can learn. You know, it's they remain patient, and they remain faithful to our program. And I really appreciate that and respect the heck out of those three ladies. And so we want to continue playing good basketball. And somebody asked me, well, what's the best moment? When you think of the best moment with Hannah and V and Stina, the best moment is yet to come in my mind. It really is. I think this team can still do some special things. Although it's winding down, I think they've got their best basketball and their best moments in front of them. And that's what we're shooting for. All right. So help us celebrate that on Saturday.
This Saturday, 2 p.m. Get your tickets at csurams.com for a senior day celebration of some outstanding Rams. Brian, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate that.
You're pretty good at this.
I'm still working on it. Brian Roth is the master. We'll come back with interim head coach Chase Earl to talk about some men's basketball. Coach, good luck. I'll see you on the plane tomorrow.
All right, let's do it.
That's Ryan Williams back with more on the Coors Light Basketball Coaches Show from Lucky Joe's Sidewalk Saloon after this on the Colorado State Sports Network from Learfield. Live from Lucky Joe's Old Town Sidewalk Saloon, it is the Coors Light Basketball Coaches Show. Just heard from head coach Ryan Williams. A challenging stretch awaiting the women's team as they build momentum towards the Mountain West Tournament Championship. Pleased to be joined right now by interim head coach Jace Searle. Jace, welcome back.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
I know last time you got a standing ovation from the crowd here. Brian rolled you in here. And for a moment there, yeah, that's right. For a moment there, you're the winningest coach in Colorado State basketball history.
Yeah, that didn't
you got
last
that
very
huge,
long.
Huge victory over San Jose State here, undefeated. And then you had a week off to savor it. How was that?
The week was good. You know, I mean, we got back to practice a little bit, rest a little bit, but you know, just moving forward, just trying to be consistent with the guys and consistent with their effort and be better in practice than we were the day before.
Yeah, everyone's trying to do that. And, of course, then you had the really tough challenge coming up this past weekend on Fresno. You went out there, and it's a team that has probably been playing as well as anybody. And this is a Mountain West League. We just talked with Ryan Williams about how the Mountain West women's side has been up and down. It's kind of logjam with people. Boy, teams on the men's side have just been finding runs and then crashing down and then runs. And then we're still waiting on that one for Colorado State, which I think will emerge here shortly. We'll talk about that in our final segment. But first, you go out to Fresno State, 86-65. And you got off to a pretty decent start, but then all of a sudden things started turning and Fresno State started hitting some shots. What contributed to that?
You know, just we couple stretches throughout the game. A two-minute stretch, we were up 14-9, then we go down, you know, 20-14, battle back, get it 22-6, then close out the half, they're up 37-26. So, yeah. You know, in those 5-6 minutes, they outscore you 22-4, it's going to be tough to close that on the road.
And one of the biggest problems with that was Nico Carvacho picks up a couple of quick early whistles, and then all of a sudden you feel like you're scrambling a little bit trying to make adjustments. What adjustments were you looking for to fill in? What was a very important component of your attack?
Yeah, I mean, anytime, you know, when Nico's on the floor, it makes a difference for everybody, you know, defensively, offensively, everything. But, you know, we had to scramble a little bit around with rotations, play some different lineups than what we were used to. But, you know, they pounded it in the paint. To their credit, they did exactly what they wanted to do game plan-wise. You know, scored 52 points in the paint, which is a ton. And that wasn't all just because Nico was out. That was, right. That was some stuff we didn't execute very well and that we've been working on. But, you know, they're a good team. They're well coached. A lot of older guys that have been in that system a long time. And I mean, that's just a tough place to play. You know, and I thought for periods of time we played pretty well and we got some good shots. And you know, when they went on their runs, we took some bad shots. You know, what's fed into their runs even more. So not being able to set our defense, taking some quick shots, trying to get back 8 or 10 points in one shot.
Well, and that's one of the other problems in that first half. The 3-point shooting was a little bit. You know, when you go on the road in a very tough environment, and I've said this about it doesn't matter what game you're playing, that 3-point shot can be an equalizer. And that's where you, if you maybe have some issues, and especially if you're running into some foul trouble, then you can equalize that a little bit with a 3-point shot. That wasn't working necessarily. Were you getting good looks, or was the Fresno State defense closing out and taking some things away from you?
You know, we're shooting too many of them, I mean, honest. So, you know, if we could model our game like Fresno did, they shot 12 threes in the game. Last two games, we've shot 64% from two, 30% from three, but 45% of our shots are coming from three. So we need to figure out a way to get that torque or, you know, kind of moved around a different way so that we can play to our strengths like Fresno did. And that's why they were able to open the game up. They got good quality twos, and we took some bad threes.
Yeah, when you look back at what you were successful at here at home against San Jose State, and then you went on the road to Fresno State, what worked well for you? Can you build upon from the success here at home that you saw in this game? Even though you dropped the contest, what can you use from your team's performance to propel you forward going down the stretch here?
You know, I thought we shared the ball. Excuse me. I thought we shared the ball well against, you know, against Fresno. Still had 15 assists, had 19 assists or 18 against San Jose. You know, we turned it over a little bit, but, you know, you're going to turn it over a little bit on the road. But if we can keep sharing the ball, getting everybody involved, I think that's something we really concentrate on going forward.
Colorado State falls 86-65 on the road at Fresno State. A lot to move forward, however, for this squad in a wide-open Mountain West. We'll talk about that more with interim head coach Jace Searle after this on the Colorado State Sports Network from Learfield. Back in beautiful Old Town Fort Collins, a snowy night, but a very warm crowd. Thank you all for coming out here. We appreciate it. Lucky Joe's Sidewalk Saloon, Rams basketball and the Coors Light Coaches Show brought to you tonight by Go RVing, a proud partner of Coaches versus Cancer and the 3-Point Challenge. Visit 3pointchallenge.org. And also by Bank of Colorado. Bank of Colorado, there's only one member FDIC. Interim head coach Jay Searle joins me now. We were just having a little discussion on the side here about looking at forward. Boy, Ryan Williams had a whole lot of things to say about how tough his stretch is going down here. Now you're running into some of the toughest teams in the Mountain West. How do you prepare your kids for what's coming up?
You know, that three-game stretch from Fresno to Boise at home to at Nevada, you know, top three teams in the league. So, you know, just trying to be consistent, like we said, trying to get positives moving forward and execute what we're trying to get on the floor.
Of course, Colorado State welcomes in Boise State here on Wednesday at Moby Arena. Now 21-6, second in the standings, and they have the preseason player of the year coming in. I think that this is a really interesting matchup. I mean, obviously, they're going to be NBA scouts taking a look here. They're going to be filling up seats, looking to see whether or not to draft this guy. How do you stop this player? How do you get out there and use maybe a team defensive approach instead of one-on-one? How do you attack a player of that caliber coming into your gym?
You know, there's a reason he's going to be a first rounder. I mean, he's had 40-something on San Diego State. He's hit 7 threes in a game. He's really good from two. You just got to try to figure out what we're going to take away, one or two things, and then, you know, really try to concentrate on that as a game plan. But, you know, if anything, we're going to try to force him to shoot jumpers, try to keep him out of the paint, try to keep him in that 14 to 17 foot area, and, you know, maybe go under some ball screens and things like that. We probably need to switch up, you know, how we're going to be covering him as well, just to keep him off guard a little bit.
And is there any way that maybe by having a player of that offensive caliber who can really fill it up from a variety of spots, can you keep the pressure on him for 40 minutes? Maybe on the defensive side, make him work harder defensively to maybe take the legs and energy out of him when you go down that stretch. Is that part of the components?
Yeah, that's something we've been looking at, you know, kind of trying to put together our game plan is putting him in situations and actions where, you know, he's forced to make some decisions on maybe fouling, not fouling, things like that, where he may be wanting to run to the other end of the floor with the ball on offense. So we're definitely going to try to go at him on defense, try to make him guard, try to wear him down a little bit on that end as well.
So, but when you focus on a couple of matchups and you got a spotlight on one player who's running around and everyone's paying attention to that, a lot of times it's the secondary areas that come to the forefront and make the difference between winning and losing. What secondary areas do you see for your squad primarily?
I mean, Sangfelder, Jessup, Hobbs, I mean, they're a really good team.
Yeah.
And they're the best defensive team in the league, you know. They rebound the ball extremely well on both ends of the floor, so they're not just a one-man show by no means. They could easily be winning the league right now if it wasn't for, you know, losing a close one to Nevada at home right at the end. But, you know, they're talented, and it's not just Hutchinson, you know, and he plays well with those guys, and they play well with him, and they move off of him. And, you know, there's games where he's only shot 6 or 7 times and makes such an impact in all the other areas from passing the ball to getting his guys open looks to setting screens and doing those things.
How do you keep up with a team like that on the offensive side of things? What are you looking for offensively from your squad? You know, you look back at this Fresno State game. I mean, we talked about Nico's problems with fouls, so that limited. Prentice Nixon had a rough night shooting. Where does your scoring come from to keep up with a potent Bronco offense?
Well, we've got to control the tempo. You know, we've got to force them to guard our stuff, guard our guys in the positions that we want them to be in. They're really good at getting teams to take quick shots and running out the other way because they defensive rebound it so well. They give up very little offensive rebounds. So when they get that shot up, they're going the other way. So we've got to make them guard for long periods of time and then, you know, terminate the possession with a good shot.
Sure.
That way we can also set our defense.
Yep, and one of the things that you said in our last segment that you weren't real thrilled about was that three-point shot on the outside. I said it's a great equalizer. You think you're better than settling for a perimeter jumper. How do you penetrate this Boise State defense?
You know, we got to get these guys in better positions that suit their skill set.
Okay.
You know, we are good inside with Nico and Dion and Che, but, you know, Prentice, Raquan, Anthony are really good finishers around the rim. And, you know, we talked to him today about just because we're saying we're scoring it from two doesn't mean that, you know, Nico and those guys are taking every shot.
Exactly.
You know, trying to convince the guards of that's one thing.
Sure.
You know, the bigs like it because they think they're going to get the ball. But we've got to score from two in a multitude of ways, not just throwing the ball inside.
Right. And so, obviously, we're focusing on Boise State because that's the first one here home. But then you get to go out to Nevada. And they have had a few changes. Some injuries have changed them, but they still remain a potent up and down squad. And trust me, once again, traveled out there. That's a hard gymnasium to play. Boy, that place, it's just like Moby Arena. It is just straight up. The avalanche of sound comes down on you. I get more of a feeling that not only will you be forced physically to compete with this squad, but this might be one of the bigger mental challenges, because when the tide starts turning a little bit, it can really steamroll on you out there. Do you view it that same way, that this is a great mental challenge to go against the top team in the conference on the road?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we had one of the better teams in the league last year, and I think it got to us. You know, when we had Gian and Emmanuel, I mean, we go out there, and it was a close game for 35 minutes, and they busted it open, and that place was sold out, and it was rocking, and they got the same thing going on again this year, and they're a really good offensive team. A lot of light guys. They switch one through five, so it's definitely going to be a test. And the place is rowdy. Fans are rowdy. They're on you. Like you said, they're right on top of you. So, you know, we're going to have to, when those runs start coming in, they're going to make runs just like Fresno did. Nevada's a good team. We've got to manage those runs and try to stem the tide a little bit, per se, by taking good shots and having longer offensive possessions and not just giving them the ball back to run the other end of the floor.
So you want to see more discipline on the offensive side of things, finding the best shot, not just an open shot? Is that what you're still trying to work on here as we move? Because that's going to be important. I mean, that's what it's so important in tournament time. I mean, it's not just trying to shoot somebody out. I mean, you get into tough, an open shot. Is that what you're still trying to work on here as we move? Because that's going to be important. I mean, that's what it's so important in tournament time. I mean, it's not just trying to shoot somebody out. I mean, you get into tough late situation games. I mean, that's what you need to be steeled for, right?
Yeah, and then it allows you to set your defense, you know, and it allows us, we're one of the better offensive rebounding teams in the league. So when we get that thing up there and it's a good shot, we have the guys in the right places to go and get the ball too. So when we're able to do that and set our defense, we're pretty good. But when we take quick threes, you know, quick 17-footers, and we don't have our rebounders down there and our floor spacing isn't right, it does not complement our defense at all.
Well, as far as your defense goes, looking at these two potent squads, what would you like to see improve from where you were, let's say, from Fresno this past weekend to building up to, again, that momentum? Because defense wins championships, and that's how it's got to be. What would you like to see improve going forward?
We got to do a better job guarding inside. We've got to front the post when they need to be fronted.
Okay.
We've got to be able to play without fouling in there, and we've got to keep Nico and our other guys out of foul trouble.
Yep, that's a really good game plan. Colorado State has all the talent and all the ability to make a big, giant wave in the Mountain West as we close out this regular season and walking into the Mountain West tournament. We'll get interim head coach Jay Searle's thoughts about his team's progress towards the tournament after this short break. Thanks for joining us. Don't go anywhere. Back in a moment on the Colorado State Sports Network from Learfield. Joe's Sidewalk Saloon. Hoosiers Life Basketball Coaches Show, brought to you by Foothills, the spot to go pre or post game. Enjoy more than a dozen restaurants and eateries and use the newly opened pedestrian walkway under College Avenue. Visit shopfoothills.com. Also by UC Health, with more clinical trials and advanced treatments than any other health system in the region. The game changers in medicine are at UC Health. Game changers sitting next to me as well, interim head coach Jay Searle. So we just talked a little bit about the stretch going forward, how tough it is, how difficult it is. But in a lot of ways, that's the challenge that this squad needs to meet. Is this a little preseason preview of what you can expect when you get into that tournament, when that NCAA tournament berth is on the line?
Yeah, I mean, we're, like I said, we're playing the top three teams in the next three games, or, you know, Fresno, Boise, Nevada. So, you know, you roll it out there and you can compare yourself. And then the good thing is you get a reset. We have a bye week right before the conference tournament, and we can get figured out our matchup and everything going forward, and, you know, put in a few new things and mix it up a little bit, and then go into the tournament playing loose and free.
Yep, absolutely. And going loose and free is the big key. But I mentioned it in our earlier segment with head coach Ryan Williams. Let's also point out that Colorado State will have their senior night on February 28th. That is a Wednesday. Shea Bob is going to be playing his final game in the green and gold here. Again, it's an emotional night. And it's just all about building up to things. And obviously you support kids who have put in their heart and soul and their sweat and tears into a program, and you want to reward them for the hard work that they've done. But at the end of the day, you also want to reward them for their hard work by making a big push and everybody being behind the sled as you go into the Mountain West tournament. What do you have to do as a coach to get everybody moving forward and saying, look, we can get this done in the tournament?
I think just not looking at it as a whole, you know, breaking it down piece by piece, bit by bit, day by day, and, you know, not overwhelming them, but showing them how we can do it and where it can be done instead of just telling them, hey, you know, we got to win 4 games in 4 days. I mean, when you say that, that sounds like a pretty big deal. But when you break it down day by day, you know, it gives them a little more energy going forward. And I think that's something we're going to try to do.
What do you have to do as a coach to get your team prepared to accept those little pieces when you can see the entire picture? How hard is it? What are some of the challenges that come as you as a coach?
Just keep having good practices. Trying to keep these guys locked in. And for a guy like Che, when the end kind of is near, you know, we kind of saw it with Emmanuel and Gian a little bit last year. It's hard when that's coming to an end not to think what's next, you know, and how can we keep Che focused on what's happening now, not get to Las Vegas and worry about, you know, all the other things that are going to happen afterwards, you know. So and get these guys going in the right direction, having good practices, and keeping everything simple for them.
Are there any particular areas of the game that you want to see change moving forward that you think would give you the best chance to be successful in that tournament? What do you want to see your team get better at over the next few days, the next preview time before you get to Vegas in March?
I think just playing to our strengths. I mean, playing to our strengths offensively, going inside out, trying to score in the paint, trying to get to the free throw line, and defensively just executing whatever our game plan is for that day. You know, we're going to rebound the ball. That's what we do. We're going to, you know, we're going to be physical. We're going to fly around and do those things. But can we execute the particular game plan on that particular day? And then on the other end of the floor offensively, can we take good shots with good spacing? You know, whether that's late in the clock, early in the clock, but, you know, taking the right shot.
Are you more focused on your team right now or scouting reports?
Our team for sure.
And obviously going to be building on that through hard work, hard practices, and hard competition.
Yep.
Colorado State welcomes in Boise State on Wednesday the 21st, at Nevada on the 25th, and then senior night Wednesday, February 28th. Get your tickets at csurams.com. Well, this is our final show before the end of the regular season. We'll be back here at Lucky Joe's on Thursday, March 1st, to preview everything for the Mountain West Tournament. Interim head coach Jay Searle, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for coming.
Head Coach Ryan Williams of the women's squad. Bob Greenfield, thank you.
Live,
we'll see you next
Lucky
time
Joe's
on the Colorado
Salute.
State Sports Network
Coors
from Learfield.
Light Basketball Coaches Show has been brought to you by Coors Light. Whatever your mountain, climb on. Also by Bank of Colorado. There's only one. By UC Health. And by First Bank. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Colorado State Sports Network.